We're working on this series, just basically things you can count on when you can't count on anything. So I've been bringing up some crazy things that you guys are telling me that you count on via social media. Some things I've seen out there. This is kind of for single people, but you can count on this. Your crush is going to hit you up as soon as you get in a relationship. Right? You know that. Here's another one that probably everybody experienced. Your toast will always fall jam side down. Let's just count on it. You're never going to dress right for the weather if you're going out to anything. You're not going to dress. It's going to be too much or too little. Angie Merrick said this. She says, with four boy children, a few younger kids, I can count on pee on the toilet seat at least once a day. Count on that. Melissa Anderson said, when shopping at Walmart, I can always count on plenty of time to catch up on emails or social media or even make new friends while waiting in line to check out. And then, Danya, I have a gift card for you, but it's up in my bag. I'm there. I forgot to bring it down. So I promise I have it. But this one's Danya's. When you're running late, you can count on getting stuck behind a train, a school bus, a mail truck. No offense, mail drivers. Where's Nick, by the way, Nick, yeah, thank you, Nicholas Rao, did I say that right, Rao or Ro, is it Ro, I always say Rao, Ro, Nicholas Ro, just started playing with this a few months ago, really, but he's a mail truck driver, so no offense, but when you're running late, guaranteed to get stuck behind one of you, a student driver or a 90-year-old driver. You know, they're just out for a sunny stroll. So, Danya, kudos to you. You're the winner today. That's what I count on. If you want to participate in that, we've just got a couple more weeks left of that. But maybe some more to come on those as well. So, what we can count on today that we're talking about is that God's grace is always going to be enough. God's grace is always going to be enough. You can count on that. Grace is enough. Now, that's kind of a common phrase in the church world. Like, yeah, we kind of know that. Folks who've been around a while in the church, we say it a lot. It comes from 2 Corinthians chapter 12. And the Apostle Paul is writing this in 2 Corinthians, a letter to the Corinthian people. He's going on this long monologue that starts in chapter 11 and goes through chapter 12 about what it means to boast and who ought to be able to boast and who hadn't ought to boast. And he's like, I don't think I should boast, but if I was going to boast, it'd be about one thing, and that's how weak I am. I'd boast about how weak I am, is basically what he's saying. And I felt like when I was reading all that context of it, I was like, is he at a job interview where the interviewer says, tell me your greatest weakness? And he's like, I work too hard. I'm just too humble, you know? Like, I'm so humble. I don't know anybody as humble as I am. That's my weakness. He boasts about how weak he is, but here's why. It's 2 Corinthians chapter 12, 7 through 10. It says, so to keep me from becoming conceited, so, you know, he's like worried that he's going to become, you know, have a big head or whatever. To keep me from becoming conceited because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations, a thorn was given me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to harass me, to keep me from being conceited. All right, so he's saying to keep from being conceited, then something was given to him. A thorn in his flesh is how he puts it. Most scholars think he had some kind of physical ailment. There was some kind of like disability that he had or a handicap of sorts, something that kept him from doing the things that he would have liked to have done or liked to have done them the way he felt like he should. I personally just think it proves that he was married. Just kidding. Dirk knows what I'm talking about. Just kidding. Charity's great. But maybe it would have been this. His eyesight. His eyesight is a potential thing that might have been something that he had an ailment with. And we know that because in Galatians towards the end, he's like, look how big my handwriting is. Because he actually wrote that. Parts of that. It's like, look, I'm actually writing this myself. Look how big my handwriting is. So some people think maybe he had some eye issues, couldn't see all that well. But he had something wrong with him, something that limited. It's something that he called a thorn in his flesh. How many of you have had that? Something, some limitation, some sort of something that keeps you from being as whole or complete as you want to be. Have you ever asked God to remove that thing? Have you ever asked, like, got this thing, God, sure would like you to get rid of it. Well, Paul did too. He says, verse 8, three times I pleaded with the Lord about this, that it should leave me. So three times he prayed to God like, boy, I got this thing, God. I sure would like you to remove it. Pretty persistent in his prayer on that. He asked three times, right? I think sometimes we pray once and then we kind of get over it. Like, oh, well, God didn't answer it, so I move on. And there's other teachings that Jesus has for us where he's telling us persistence in prayer is important, because why should God remove the thing when you don't even care enough to be persistent in prayer? Now, I would venture to say that three times isn't really persistent enough. You know, like, he gave up after three times. Well, it's because he got an answer. He got an answer back. So this, moving on, this is verse 9 now. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in your weakness. That's not usually the answer that I want. If I pray for God to remove something, I just want him to remove it. I don't want him to come back and say, you get to keep it, and also you get to rely on me. And by the way, no complaining. I just want him to say, okay, Dave, I'll take it away. I got it. I got this. But more often than not, God says something like, you're going to keep going through some crap. You're just going to keep going through it. That's being human. You're going to keep going through it, and you're going to keep having a limitation. You're going to keep struggling, but guess what? My strength is made perfect, or actually complete. My strength is fulfilled. My strength is whole when you recognize your weakness. That's when God can have his strength be shown. Now Paul finishes up this little section. He says, therefore I will boast all the more gladly for my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. For the sake of Christ, then, I am content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities. For when I am weak, that's when I'm strong. Then I'm strong. So today, I want to key in on six important words of the promise that you can count on, and that is this: my grace is sufficient for you. We're going to look at each one of those words. First one is my. My grace. Whose grace is he talking about there? Whose grace? Go ahead. Huh? God's. Good. I'm glad you thought that. Because you could say, well, he's writing in the first person, he might be talking about himself, right? My grace. But it's not Paul's grace. It's not any human's grace. Paul is reporting God's response to Paul's request, saying, God's grace, my grace. God's saying, my grace is sufficient for you. That's God saying mine. I think if it was Paul saying it, we probably wouldn't even be talking about it, would we? Because a human's grace isn't all that good. It's God's grace. God is the one saying his grace is sufficient. And when he says it is, you can believe in it. We wouldn't talk about Paul's grace because it would be insufficient. He was a mortal man, just like you and me. He didn't really dole out grace very easily or widely, honestly. If you read Paul, man, he's hardcore. He would not be someone you want to hang out with, okay? He's not a good hang. He didn't dole it out easily because he's human, and you and I don't dole out grace terribly easily. I'm limited because of my preconceived notions of people, and I have personal biases. Just do. I mean, I'm just being honest. I try to get rid of those. I'm working on that. But please be honest with me that you have them too. We just do. I'm limited because I have a fear of what other people might think about me. Yeah, if I sidle up to this person, even though I know God would have me do that, or Jesus would if he was here, what will other people say if I accept that person as they are. I'm limited on grace because we're all limited on grace, but no human was claiming to have sufficient grace here. This was God saying, my grace is sufficient. God is the one who claims sufficient grace. So whose grace is it? God's grace through Jesus Christ. Remember that Paul wasn't the only one who suffered a thorn in his flesh. Jesus had a literal crown of thorns in his flesh. He suffered too. And God didn't remove that from him. And yet God's grace is sufficient for all of us, for you. Grace. Grace. We have people named Grace. Yeah, we do. Comes from the Greek word charis. Unmerited favor is a good term for that. It's a gift that you do not deserve. Have you ever received something that you don't deserve? A gift or something like just somebody gave you something, you don't deserve it? Christmas is that way. It ought to be, you know. It's not really Christmas gifts if, like, I'm only giving this to you because you gave to me, or I'm hoping you'll give to me, so I give to you. You know, like, that's not grace. It's not giving, right? Retributive. I kind of need a volunteer again, and hopefully a volunteer that hasn't been with us for a long time, like somebody who doesn't really know me that well, and I don't know them. So, okay, come on up. All right. We just met like 2-3 weeks ago, right?
Yep.
Okay. So last week we had cookies for everybody. If you were here last week, did you enjoy the cookies? Okay. You can thank Sarah and Danya. Danya's here this week. Yeah. Who, you want to hold this?
Sure.
Okay. What? Tell us your name.
Nikki.
Oh, can you turn that on? I'm sorry. I did not prepare them for this. Okay.
Nikki.
I'm Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Have we met other than here before? Can you confirm?
No.
We've never seen each other in public. You're not from Newark?
No, I've only been here for like 6 weeks.
Okay. So 6 weeks here. Been coming 3 weeks here maybe,
yes,
or so. Okay. Have I ever asked you to do anything for me in the past? No jobs, no volunteer work, no anything.
But okay. I'd be glad to.
Okay, that's fair enough. Everybody heard that, right? But that is not necessary for today, because I just want to give you this. It's $10 that I found in my wallet. Nobody stole it beforehand. I was really thankful, because while we were playing the songs, I was like, I hope nobody took that money, because that's all I have. I'm going to give this to you. This is yours.
Mine?
That's yours to have.
Are you sure?
This is a free gift.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Don't you wish you'd volunteered now? So God bless you.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you.
God bless you. Yes, thank you to Nikki.
All
right.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. That's grace right there. Well, it's Nikki, but she received grace. Now, poor Angie Merrick. I don't think Angie's here, but last week I made her eat baking soda. So watch out next week. Who knows if it'll be good or bad? But that's grace right there. It's a gift that we're given that has no strings attached, nothing that is like a give or a take, no deserving, no earning it. She said she'd be willing to do things for us, but the $10 is not contingent upon that, okay? What it might be is that she might do that in response to the gift that she's been given. Okay, do you see the connection here? We cannot earn or deserve the grace that God gives us. And in fact, we can't even owe it. Oh, well, I owe God now. All right? You don't owe him anything. However, in a response of loving gratefulness is why we do acts of service and piety for God, in response to the grace that he's given us. Do you see the difference? I've drifted from my notes here, and I'm not sure where I'm at. Okay. Thorns. We all have different thorns, because this is the context of what Paul's talking about here, right? He asked God three times, remove the thorn from my flesh. We all have different thorns. You almost all raised your hand that said, I have had limitations. I have had things that I would call a thorn. Maybe it's a physical ailment, or maybe it's a limitation, or a handicap of some sort. Maybe it's a broken relationship that you've experienced, or a relationship that you're in, but it's kind of one-sided and it's domineering, and you feel oppressed in that relationship. Maybe it's a particular sin that you're struggling with, that you consistently revisit this temptation over and over and over again. We're going to talk about that next week. But you never seem to have victory in it. It's just a thorn in your flesh that just keeps coming back after you. But here's the thing. God does not always remove the thorn. He doesn't always get rid of it. I think God does one of two things. He can remove it, but most often, he strengthens the shoulder that bears the load. He just comes alongside you and strengthens your weakness by applying his strength. I mentioned this a little bit ago. The thing about the elevator that I said wasn't true, but the context was. I spent some time in the hospital this last week. I had two nights in the hospital. I have a condition. Most people actually have it, but sometimes it flares up on some people. Diverticulitis. Have you ever heard of it? So it's really gross if you want to get into it later. But the point is that it causes a lot of pain in my around my waistline. All right, lots of pain and nausea. And it started on after church on Sunday, May 23rd. And I've been dealing with it for a month now, 4 weeks. And I've been in the hospital twice on it. And I told Reggie yesterday, I honestly haven't asked God to remove it, because this is what happens to my body. I have had so many surgeries and so many things just happen to me. Honestly, I just kind of know that they're going to happen. I get mad at the guy, like, oh, here we go again. But I haven't asked him to remove it, but I am leaning on his grace because I know it's sufficient. I'll get through this. I'm probably going to have some surgery later in the summer, maybe in the fall, if I can make it that long, honestly. I'm just facing it. It's a thorn in my flesh. It's literally, there's little thorns in the flesh that that cause me problems, and it keeps me from doing things that I want to do the way I want to do them, the way I feel like God would want me to do them. It's a thorn. But yet, I've been through enough hospitalizations, enough physical ailments to know that God's in control of it for me, and to know that his grace is sufficient to see me through whatever next step I need to take. I'll take the step. I'll go through it. But it doesn't mean it's going to be great. It probably means I'm going to be in pain a lot for a longer period of time. Grace isn't something that's cowardice or timid. Grace is a sign of strength. Sometimes we associate grace like, oh, that's weak. You got to be stronger than that. No. Actually, grace is a sign of strength. It's not weak or wimpy. It's the power of God to fulfill what we lack. Grace is the favor and love of God in action. He loves us. He's pleased by us. God looks at us and he says, it's good. So I'm going to do the good things to keep that person going, despite all of our shortcomings. Despite all the thorns in our flesh, he says you're still good. And he wants to give you grace. So my grace, then the next thing is. My grace is. It's a present tense. It's now. I think it's easy to look to the past where you can say, oh yeah, God's grace was sufficient then. I saw how he got me through that. But I don't really need it anymore because I'm good. I can do this on my own. But God says, It is sufficient now. Some people look at God as a parent. You kind of grow up and you outgrow your parents a little bit, you know? No offense, mom and dad are here. still call on them from time to time. But like, you, with every step of independence you need, or every step of independence you get, the less you need your parents to rely on them for everything you have. So we kind of outgrow them. And sometimes we kind of sort of assume that God's the same way. As we mature, we can just shake off God just the same as we shook off the authority of our parents. And so we treat God the way we treat our parents, and we give him some measure of respect, we give him his due, but we no longer feel like we really have to obey him anymore, do the things he wants us to do. So what happens is, in our hearts, we kind of move out of his house. We think we can make our own rules for life as long as we have supper at God's house once a week. And we give him the old man, you know, a little bit of recognition. But our real view of that is that grace was sufficient. It's past tense. Grace was sufficient, but when we think that way, it's not necessarily is sufficient. Grace was sufficient, yes, but it also is sufficient. It's easy to think back of when grace was sufficient, but what about future grace? We go, oh, grace will be sufficient because I'm going to need it at some point, but I'm not good enough right now for it. I got to clean up my act a little bit before I'm worthy of grace. Yeah, because I've got too many things going on now to make it so that I should even be considered for grace. When I start behaving like I should, that's when God will give me grace. When I quit smoking, drinking, cussing, gambling, abusing, adulterizing, that's when God will love me. God's grace will be sufficient in the future, right? Do you remember the definition of grace? It's unmerited favor. There's nothing you can do that will help you earn it or deserve it. In the future, you're never going to be deserving enough. You're never going to earn it enough to get God's love. That's why he just gives it freely today, in the present, right now. You just receive it. God's grace was sufficient. God's grace will be sufficient. And God's grace is sufficient today. Right now, at this moment, his grace is sufficient for you. I mean, you thought you maybe had to change something in your life for grace to be sufficient for you. No. You can count on it now. God's grace is sufficient for you. So let's look at that word sufficient. I said it a bunch of times already. Sufficient. Been throwing that word around. Sufficient is this. You can kind of explain it better in a phrase. What's it mean to be self-sufficient? It's like able to maintain oneself without help. That's self-sufficient. We Americans pride ourselves on self-sufficiency, though, right? We pulled ourselves up by our own bootstraps. Like, that's a point of pride for many of us. That rugged American appeal. We really value the word independent, right? I don't rely on anybody else. I'm self-sufficient. We can do this on our own. Here's the problem with that view. We can't really believe that God's grace is sufficient until we believe we ourselves are insufficient. We can't really grasp that concept of God's grace, of his sufficiency, if we haven't reckoned with our own insufficiency. For many of us in the American culture especially, it's a huge obstacle. We're the people who idolize the self-made man, and we want to rely on ourselves, but we can't receive God's strength until we recognize our own weakness, our own insufficiency, and we just say, "I can't do it. I just can't do this on my own." Moses knew of our propensity towards self-sufficiency a long time ago. He says this in Deuteronomy 8. 17 through 18. He says, "You might say to yourself, my power and the strength of my own hands have produced this wealth for me. But remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the ability to produce wealth, and so confirms his covenant, which he swore to your ancestors as it is today. And we think we're the ones who take care of ourselves. I pay the bills. I built this house with my own two hands. I remodeled it. In my case, I remodeled this house. I've got the job that pays for all this. God didn't do that. I worked hard for this. We think we have produced the wealth, but remember, God is the one who gives you the ability to do so. We're insufficient to do what we think we have the capability to do, and we cannot experience the true sufficiency of God's grace until we recognize and grapple with our own insufficiency. All of our vain efforts to bring worth to our lives, to bring merit to our existence, it's insufficient. All of our attempts to overcome our thorns in the flesh, all of our struggling to remove those things that hold us back, they're insufficient. Even our attempts to become good enough to earn God's grace are insufficient. God has a very simple plan. He simply says, "My grace is sufficient." That's really it. And we cannot grasp his sufficiency until we reckon with our own insufficiency. It's enough. In fact, it's more than enough to remove your thorn, to heal that thorn in your flesh, and to strengthen your shoulder to carry the load. His grace is sufficient. And I'm going to put the last two words together. For you. For you. God was talking to Paul here, but I don't think it's limited to just Paul. I think this promise is for you. God made it broad enough to be for everyone, and you can be the you in the for you. God's grace is sufficient for you. Are you above receiving God's grace? Are you beyond it? Have you grown past it? Are you so different that you don't need it? Is your thorn worse than what Paul had? I don't know what he had, but is it worse than what he had? Is it worse than any others? No. Of course not. Your thorn isn't any bigger or stronger than God's grace. It's for you. So where are you at in this sermon? Do you have a thorn in your flesh that can't seem to be overcome by anything? It's just there. You got a thorn in your flesh that keeps holding you back? Do you struggle with the idea of grace, a free gift, that God would give you something that you don't earn, that you don't deserve, that you can't even really pay back or you don't want to owe? Do you struggle with self-sufficiency? Kind of like a couple weeks ago, we had that message on don't you can't count on yourself even, trusting in God instead. Have you grappled with your insufficiency so that you can rely on the sufficiency of God's grace? Have you ever thought about the words "for you"? That God is for you. He wants the best for you. That's powerful stuff. God is for you. He's trying every trick in the book to find reasons to bring you into relationship with him, to strengthen you, to build you up, to bring you into community with other people. I think sometimes we think God's looking for every reason to kick us out. But no, he's for you. He wants you to be in with him. And you can receive his grace today. It's not easy to take something that's freely given. Did you see Nikki hesitate for just a second? When I gave her $10, she's like, no, this is your gift. It's for you. We hesitate at it. But we need to receive it. Receive it. I want you to take it. You could take the greatest gift that's ever been given, this free gift. It will help you deal with your thorns, and it will bring you into relationship with God, because God's grace is sufficient for you, and that's what you can count on today. Let's pray. God, we thank you that's the reality of our being with you, We ask that you would make it a reality in our lives, that we could receive your grace. We could accept the unmerited favor that you've given us through Jesus Christ to bring us into relationship with you. Maybe remove some thorns. I don't know if somebody has the thorn that you're going to remove. You have the power to do it. But if you don't remove it, help us to accept your grace to simply bear through it, to be strengthened by you. It's in our weakness that you are made strong. So God, we ask that you show us your strength here this morning. In Jesus' name.